How you doing? Welcome to another episode. I hope you're all well. This week we're joined by the one and only Pat Nevin. When I set out to do this, we had a list of people that we really wanted. And Pat was at the top of that list, and it was great to finally catch up with him, albeit over a number of Skype phone calls, due to, I think, my connection not being the very best in the world. But he was exceptionally patient with us, and it was great. I think it's been stated, you know, I'm an Evertonian, as a former Evertonian, but also to hear him talk about Johnny King, former Tranmere manager, and just generally how football has defined him as a person, I think, and how he has enjoyed football, which is why Pat has gone for a memory that's not necessarily the same as everybody else. You'd obviously go to expect that with Pat, but it was great to hear about what football meant to him and about how he enjoyed his career and then his moments. But quite frankly, gave any opportunity to think about Sunshine on Leith, particularly the Hibs fans' rendition of said Proclaimer song is any opportunity to do that. And Pat talks about what actually being a Hibernian fan means to him. Considering his past as a Celtic fan, and it was great, a real honour to talk to Pat, because he is a pundit at the top of his game, in the same way that he was an outstanding footballer as well. So I hope you enjoy it as much as we have, and here we go.
Well, oddly, my memories of, you know, have to be seen in two kind of slightly different ways, as a player or as a fan. You know, and oddly enough, when people usually talk to me, they ask me, you know, as a player. So my memory as a player, the best memory and the biggest effect anything has had on me, it kind of should be something like, you know, scoring the winner in the semi-final, you know, when we won the semi-final for Everton, to get us into that final against, you know, Liverpool. But, of course, that was the day of Hillsborough, so it was a high and the low of my career in one moment. It should be kind of that, but it's kind of a bit obvious, and it had a massive, massive effect on everybody, but it's not, you know, me, that's everybody. So yeah. I have to be honest with you, the biggest effect anything ever had on me was I was playing for Chelsea, and it was just after my first season, nearly end of my first season, and I used to walk to the games, which is hilarious now when you consider it. What the players deal with. So I lived in Ells Court at the time, so I walked down to the game, I was player of the year that year. It just shows you how mad football has changed in that short period of time. And I went in, and, you know, we played and we won, and it was a good game, and I scored, and I thought I'd just walk back home afterwards. Yeah, it's only about a 10-minute walk, it's fine. And I quite often just bumped into fans as walking, and they knew that I was just kind of a normal bloke, and it was perfectly fine. But as I was walking along this particular day, this old guy just kind of walked in step with me, which some people just did, you know, and had a quick chat. And he said, "You're Nevin, aren't you?" And I went, "Yeah." And he said, "I came out to see you today. I don't go out much anymore, and I don't go much football, but I'd heard you're a skillful player and a dribbler, and I came out to see you today." And I said, "Do you enjoy it?" And he goes, "Yeah, had a good time." And I went to I went to talk to him more about it, and he just walked away. And it was like, I was always dedicated to every game I ever played. I just thought, that is the reason why I play football, more than anything else. To show, to entertain, number one, to, you know, show that you're capable of creating something that people will want to see and enjoy in the midst of it all. And the big thing about it is, I might never have bumped into that guy. And he'd made the effort, and he'd had a good day out, and it had given him a happy weekend. Now, that was just one guy. Now, that might be lots of people who you'll never... And it is lots of people you'll never meet. And I knew that I'd always give everything to every game anyway, because my dad used to come down to every game. And he lived in Glasgow, and I was playing in London. And when I was at Everton, he never missed a game. And when I was at Tranmere, he never missed a game. And it was extraordinary. So I was always going to give everything to it. But it wasn't about the scoring the goals. It wasn't about, you know, the fame or any of that stuff. Definitely wasn't about the money. But see, to give a wee bit of happiness just to people, just, you know, that means everything to me, and it meant everything to me. And it just underlined it that guy who I never met again and never heard from again was probably nailed the most important thing of playing football to me. And I went on, I played 20 years just about as a professional footballer, and I never forgot that moment. And there's been lots of other brilliant moments, you know, where people said nice things and you've met with people and you want an autograph or all that sort of stuff. Yeah, that is fine. But it was that moment where I thought, never, ever, ever turn up and give anything less. Because that guy spent probably every penny he had. He got him off his seat. You know, I played all these thoughts in my mind of his history, his background, you know, why didn't get out and all that sort of stuff. But I never found out. It's not important, because there's something deeper there. You're there to entertain. You're there to give people a good time. You're there to make their life a wee bit better. And you're expecting most people, I suspect, in the game to talk about a great volley or a great dribbled goal. And they're all great. But oddly enough, none of them had the effect that that had on me.
I generally think that actually, while we probably are, and others would, you've always been that little bit different throughout your career anyway. And, you know, you're a man that probably one of the few players at Everton that read When Skies Are Grey, and if they did, got it, how it was. And that's not surprising. That isn't surprising to me as an Evertonian of, you know, late 30s who remembers you as you were. And certainly as the autobiographies have come out over the last 5 years, a lot of thoughts and feelings about you have been sort of reaffirmed, confirmed for some or reaffirmed for others. Mm-hmm. When you first started out in Scotland, then you came down to England, and then after you came to that, you largely played in, all right, the Everton side that you played in, were struggling from the lack of European football, I think, and then you went to a Tranmere side that was very much on the up with a manager like Johnny King, was great. Did you notice at the time a difference between pre-meeting this man and post-meeting this man?
Kind of odd as you go through football, because you have to be in the midst of being, you know, a team player. There also is a party that has to be selfish, as in you need to do the best for yourself as you move. Now, for mine, my selfishness was I wanted to play somewhere where I was allowed to be, you know, creative, where I was allowed to do what I wanted to do. And just at the end of my time at Everton, I kind of wasn't being allowed that, really. And, you know, I heard, and I didn't really go on particularly well. We were so different, you know, and, you know, we didn't really see eye to eye. And I was a lot more serious-minded in those days. But when I went over to Tranmere, and I'd had the first couple of years were good at Everton, you know, and I was playing some of the best football, but suddenly when a new gaffer comes in, it doesn't matter how well you're playing, you're not going to get a game. So, and I went over to Tranmere for a month's loan, because the Euros were coming up and I wanted to get back in the Scotland squad, and I wasn't getting a game every week for Everton. And I went, and I was maybe a week into it, 2 weeks into my time at Tranmere, and I realised a couple of things. Number one, wow, they were a right good team. It was first bit that jumped out at me. I did not expect them to be anywhere near as good as they were. They were a top team, and we should have got to the Premier League. Yeah. But the other thing was, the manager, he's walked in and he's just said to me, yeah, just go and do what you're good at, mate. You know, go and create, and I love to see people you doing that sort of stuff. And it wasn't a line. He didn't know me. That was what Johnny King was like. And King just let us go on with it. And oddly enough, his team talks were an absolute riot. They were funny, and you never knew how much of it was a wind-up or how much of it he actually took some of that nonsense seriously. And none of it really mattered, because what Kingy had more than anything else, he could spot a player and he would just send them out and do things. Now, a little while ago, you know, just when John died, it was actually, I was down to come down and do a speech at Tranmere the day after he died. But I, obviously, that had been planned months in advance. I was going to do it about my time at Tranmere. And I was going to call it off because obviously he died. And I thought, no, I'm going to go down and I'm going to speak about John for the hour instead. Do you know what? The hour wasn't enough. All the stories we had about Kingy were just fantastic. And I mean, it's one of the lovely things. There's not many people that I've met in my life where I could stand and talk to you for an hour and tell you funny stories about things they did. And even when they weren't meaning to be funny, they were absolutely hilarious. But I'll tell you one quick one off the top of my head with John King, which was hilarious. He said, like, we're going to leave two up at a corner, you know. So a corner against us, we're going to leave two up. And then he went, actually, we'll make that three. Johnny Morrissey, Aldo and Pat, you stay up. And then he went, actually, we'll make it four. Right, we'll get four of you staying up. And we were all looking at each other going, right, okay, right, this is getting silly now, right? Because you usually leave one up, maybe two at a push. He's left it about 10 seconds. He went, actually, lads, let's go for five. And we've just went, oh, get lost. And in the end, he finished his team talk. We went out and played the game. We left two up. We didn't. We just ignored it, right? And we just couldn't do that, right? See, about 2 years ago, I watched Pep Guardiola leave five up at a corner. I was sitting watching it going, oh, my God, I can't believe it. Because Pep kind of just do extreme things. You know, he doesn't do it often. But he'll sometimes leave three up or whatever. And it was the weirdest thing that we thought he was being completely mad. But if Pep Guardiola says it, it's all right, you know. And King used to do things, all sorts of things like that. And it was lovely people. And that was one of the things, different people. I mean, you talk about Howard and I got on perfectly well once I'd left. And before him, you know, I worked under Colin Harvey and possibly my favourite guy I've ever worked with in football. Just a brilliant, brilliant guy and a fabulous Evertonian. And somebody who I was devastated for more for him than anyone else when, you know, it wasn't seen to be working out for him as a manager.
Was that part of the issue for Harvey, is that he'd obviously during the, you know, he's the classic example, if you're looking at it stereotypically, he's the classic example of the number two who never stepped it up. Although, you know, the number of top four finishes, the league finishes, obviously, if clubs hadn't been banned from Europe, then Everton would have made the UEFA Cup quite a number of times. And
well, that done my whole, yeah, done my entire career as well. I mean, my entire career was ruined by that, you know, that ban, you know. So my time when I was in teams that were getting into that top level, so I never got the European football in that period of time. So it was, you know, it's upsetting, but we know the reasons why. Oddly enough, I thought about it differently from a lot of people. When Colin did get the sack, we'd had just a bad start to the season, and we'd been unlucky in a number of games. But our kind of finishes before that were all right, you know. And in comparison to what came afterwards, Colin was doing really well. Colin's actually, his numbers aren't particularly bad. His numbers were pretty good. He got us to a cup final, you know. We were up there. We weren't going to win the league, but he was building something because he was having to rebuild a team that had been fabulous, but it was finished, you know, it was too old. So he had to rebuild it. It's hard to do that. You can't do that in 2 minutes flat, you know. So I liked what Colin was doing, and I could see what he was bringing in. He was bringing in players. Remember, he brought in Andy Hinchcliffe. He was in England international. He brought in Martin Keown. Well, he became a top England international and a brilliant marker. And he was looking around thinking he brought Peter Beardsley in, and I'm thinking, this guy knows exactly what he's doing. But we had a little bit of a sort of poor start to one season, and I think it just moved far too quickly because people were looking back thinking, well, this is Everton win leagues. Well, that was a phenomenal Everton team. And I think that was the weirdness. Everything was compared to that. You compare it to everything following it, and there weren't many Everton teams following that were any better than that team that Colin was putting together.
I mean, it kind of goes in cycles, isn't it? And, you know, I want to talk about your sort of memories of your whole career, but that late 80s, early 90s side kind of resembled the late 70s side after the really good Catterick side. Mm-hmm. And then you end up with you know, I think Everton are on the verge or could have won the title, I think, when Derby, Derby won it. Uh-huh. And then they go and lose to Carlisle. And there is a, you know, and you know, I'm an Evertonian at my absolute core. And I don't know if you've ever seen on Twitter, but there's a meme with a guy striding out of an office with an Everton badge as his head. And it means time for Everton. If you've had a strike, like, for mm-hmm. example, Saturday, Burnley, you know, have never under Sean Dyche, have never come from behind to win. Time for Everton, you know, we'll always give you that. We'll always give you that get out clause. And I think that you know was part of the issue is that, I mean, as you said, the team was getting older. As much as they wanted to, the likes of Graham Sharp, the likes of Heath, you know, they were 3-4 years older and have played a lot of physical football under Kendall's first spell. As much as they wanted to do it for Harvey, they just couldn't.
Well, it's difficult to know because there was such a schism within the group as well. And it's the only time in my career that it happened that, I remember Colin once said to me, it was in the middle of a team meeting, and he was really annoyed because it was quite clearly that, you know, a lot of the new guys and a lot of the old guys, there just wasn't a mixing. So a lot of the new guys are really very professional and didn't do a lot of drinking. The old guys had a massive, big drinking culture, but it didn't matter because they won. You know, it didn't matter. But you know, a lot of guys come in and think, "Well, we don't do that sort of stuff. The game's changing, the game's moving on," and it kind of was. There was a feeling of you should be doing what we do because we were successful, and it just wasn't a meeting. And Colin Harvey once came into the dressing room and said, "Right, you lot, there's two cliques in this club, and it's just not acceptable. You can't work." And he said, "Oh, actually, stop. There's three. There's the new lads. There's the old lads." And there's you, Pat. And I kind of took it as such a compliment because I was the one who, I kept on trying to get everyone together, but there was no way it was going to happen because that's just not what happens when you get those sort of situations. And it was a real sadness because the quality of players was good enough. With not even a shadow of a doubt, it was definitely good enough. And I'm sure everyone rewrites the history from their own position. And that will be the case. But from within it, I was just gutted and saddened that there wasn't more professionalism. I wanted more professionalism. I kind of couldn't stand the lack of professionalism of everybody working together for the common cause.
And it kind of leads on to the individual question now. I'd be interested to know if you answer something that's like the golden ticket answer.
Go ahead.
But I interviewed you a couple of years ago when you were DJing in Manchester, and we got chatting about Everton. And you said you used to love chipping Big Nev training, and then he'd like you all around Belfield trying to get you.
Yeah.
But what was your highlight at Everton? What was the time where you if you were going to look back and go, yeah, that was the great. And also actually, Pat, I think you've answered it for Chelsea, but a Tranmere and Everton and your other clubs, what were the highlights for you?
Well, the highlights are, I mean, if the normal highlights are the, like, you know, are the specific games. I mean, I can remember it was a 4-4 draw at Chelsea. We were amazing. We won a game. It was against Sheffield Wednesday, and it was fantastic. But if you score in a derby game, you know, they're great. Scoring a diving head against Arsenal for Chelsea. There was so many. I'm really lucky about that. Everton, people tend to remember the ones that were televised. I mean, there was a game against Man United where I scored a decent scoop, which I'd scored a better one during the week against Charlton. But because it wasn't televised, people don't remember. But it was far better the one during the week. But people do, it sticks in their minds. But it was good for that one against United because they were a decent side. We were kind of showing that we were up there with the very best at that point in time. And you could feel that it was going to get good. It didn't get as good as I hoped it would get, but you know that was a fantastic moment. Certainly, scoring the goal in the semi-final to get us to the final was a massive highlight. But then, and we played brilliantly that day. We battered Norwich that day and played some really sparkling football. But on the other hand, you walk off the pitch and you found out what happened at Hillsborough. So that just completely changed and coloured your viewpoints of that day. Oddly enough, if I'm really honest about it, my favourite moment in memory was the first game. was the first game of the first season when I came. And we played against Newcastle at home. And we beat them 4-0. And we destroyed them. And it should have been 10. And we played the most brilliant football. And I say watch it. We won 4-0. You'll probably get a goal somewhere online or be able to find them. But it's the Everton fans. It's the noise that they make. It's a kind of, oh, wow, this is good. Oh, this could be really, really special. We like being entertained. And it was like, it was as if we've waited a wee while for this. And this feels brilliant. And it was a real moment of like, and we had a decent start that season, a couple of games, you know, and it was a bit, I think it was the second or third game maybe against Forest. And I have to say, I was absolutely trashing Stuart Pearce at the start of the game. And I got snapped. My cruise ship was done. So that was me knackered for the next 3 or 4 months. And by the time I come back, that had all gone. Or a lot of that feeling and atmosphere, certainly within the group, within the players, it wasn't quite as good as it had been right at the start. And that's the kind of sadness of it. Because for a moment, I'd been playing with a decent Chelsea team. I'd moved to Everton, who were better. And a bit better player for player, miles better. And we bought some good players like Stuart McCall and TC and that. And I thought, this is going to be where my career really takes off. So for a moment, that moment, I thought, that this is it. This is what I've been waiting for. And maybe, you know, there were other lots of really nice moments, really good moments, but I can't remember feeling happier walking off an Everton game than I did that day. My moment, actually, it has to be as a fan, and what I felt as a fan. And when I was a kid growing up, I was a Celtic fan. That was my team, Celtic. And obviously, being a Celtic supporter was pretty handy because they win a lot. Any Celtic fan who was at the famous, you just need to say the word 4-2 to a Celtic fan, and they know what you mean. Celtic beat Rangers 4-2 with 10 men at Celtic Park to win the league. And it was the most extraordinary game that I'd ever been to at the time. And it was a religious experience, basically. That was all it was.
Yeah.
And because it was Rangers, and Rangers were 2-1 up, it was unthinkable. It was brilliant. And it was that real moment. And I remember going back that night, and somebody, one of my mates had bought me the ticket as a Christmas present. No, a birthday present. So the best birthday present I'd ever had. And I wanted to feel that, you know, that moment again. And it's hard to feel that moment again as a fan when you become a player, because it's a different type of feeling. It's just a different type. It's not, don't know if it's better, don't know if it's worse. It's just different. And I had that moment, and that would have been the moment. And I never thought it would be beaten. But I think it probably has been twice. And it's building up to what is my moment. So the other one was, oddly enough, Chelsea became a big, big part of my life. And when Chelsea won the Champions League, that was kind of massive. You know, for someone who, the Chelsea fans had been extraordinary to me, and, you know, I'd been player of the year a couple of times, and, you know, I had a real affinity with the club as well. I mean, I had the affinity with every club that I was at. I was really fortunate that way. But when I was really happy for them, for a lot of the fans, you know, what they'd gone through, because they were a bit rubbish for a long time. And they finally got there. And it was great. But it's still not that. No, actually, oddly enough, the moment was really quite recently, only a few years back. I changed teams and became a Hibs supporter, which is unthinkable. Who changes the team they support? It's a long and involved story, and it takes a lot for somebody who loves a club to change it, as you will know. Can you imagine somebody saying to you, all right, you're an Everton supporter now, but you're going to change to being a Man City supporter soon. You know, it doesn't compute, does it? Right.
It's not. It's not even registered with
exactly.
Me.
Exactly. It doesn't compute.
Well, I kind of know the background, I think, yeah. A little bit. So
there's a big background to it. But anyway, I did fall in love with Hibernian. I mean, the thing is, I didn't dislike Celtic. This is my club now. And it's a lot got to do with my son as well, who's fanatical as well. But there I was at the cup final. They hadn't won a cup final for well over 100 years, 114 years. They hadn't won the Scottish Cup. It was the biggest running joke in Scottish football. And they'd been to so many cup finals. I'd been to cup finals supporting Celtic against them. Later in my life, I'd been to lots of cup finals where they got beat. And you just thought it would never happen. And I, by this time, am the main pundit for BBC Scotland TV. So I am the face of the telly, like your Alan Hansen or your Shearer or whatever you call it, for the live game. And of course, in the last minute, they score the winner with a header against Rangers. And just, we've all lost it at various points in time. When you're in a TV studio, you're not supposed to do that sort of thing. But the place just went absolutely wild. And they just, you forget everything. The release and the relief, because we knew there was only 20 seconds left. We'd won it when that went in. And it was the most beautiful, fabulous, amazing moment as a fan that you can possibly have. And I know it's only the Scottish Cup, and it's not the Champions League, or it's not winning the league. It's none of those things. But specifically for that club at that time, and the history of it. And I did a thing afterwards, which people always forget to do this, forget where you are. It was great doing the, obviously I was a face, I was on a telly, so I was very happy and smiling about it, but all but keeping professional when the camera came back on. I was watching the fans right beneath, 10 yards below me, all singing Sunshine and Leith. They didn't behave well afterwards, which was a bit of a disappointment. They ran on the pitch and that kind of was a bit of a spoiler for it, but it didn't ruin the moment for me. But I went out and I as soon as the show was finished, instead of hanging about or jumping in my car or going anywhere else, I wanted to be with the fans, and I walked downstairs and I was looking for my son as well, and walked through the Hibs fans at the time, and I've never seen so many people cry in the one place in my life. And there was people walking along there, and again, every one of them, you could see the entire story in their eyes. There was a guy walking along who I knew to be dying because I'd met him a while back, and he was in a wheelchair. He was the happiest man I've ever seen in my life. He really was. And he just said to me, I saw it. I did. I lived to see it. And every person I walked by, and a lot of older men were there, you know, people in their 70s or 80s. And you could see them all tears streaming down their face because their dads hadn't lived to see it. and they were in their 60s and 70s and all that. They never thought they would see it, but they finally seen it. And it was the most wondrous, joyous, fabulous, fabulous time. And, you know, I don't know if I'll ever beat it, because all the history was behind it and it meant so much.
You're a half-man, half-biscuit. And you know the song, Even Men With Steel Hearts Cry When There's a Dog on the Pitch. It would have taken a man with absolute granite heart not to cry at the rendition of Sunshine and Leith, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I mean, and anyone who hasn't done it, get online. It was Hibernian 5, Kilmarnock 1, the best one was ever shown. John Collins was the manager. He just lost his dad. And just watch it. I mean, there wasn't going to be shown. I refused to speak after the game, because again, I was the main pundit afterwards, and said, as soon as they start singing Sunshine and Leith, I will not speak. So the cameras had to go outside and start showing this, and it was absolutely beautiful. And it's an amazing song, and it was a fabulous rendition of it. And you could see the children and with their fathers and mothers and brothers and best friends. And it is what football fandom is about, and every fan knows what it feels like. So you're right, be it Half Man, Half Biscuit, or Marquis Smith, or be it anybody who has any love or interest in football, we all get that moment.
Emotional scenes for John Collins and the Hibs fans. Let's just enjoy it for a moment or two. Sunshine and Leith in the snow over Hampden.
Thank you.
the production department didn't know what was going to happen, but being a Hibs supporter, I knew exactly what was going to happen. They're going to start singing this and it was going to be beautiful. So I said to Dougie Donnelly, who was the guy who was he was the link man for it, and I said, I'm not speaking during that. So anyway, when it came to the moment, he looked at me and I've just shook my head and went, nope. So he said, let's go outside and have a look at the celebrations. And then the strains of it start. And it is a beautiful moment of A, television, B, sport. But, you know, just what football is. And it doesn't really matter who you are. You're a football fan, wherever you are. You will absolutely adore that moment. And it was great. And that's why the moment of Hibs winning the cup is a big one for me. There's so much involved with it. And if you just add sunshine and Leith on the top of it, then everyone gets it.
it's just the thought of it, isn't it? Just the thought of it even gives you goosebumps. And I mean, I've always wanted to know though, are the Proclaimers, are they Hibs or Hearts fans? I'm assuming they're Hibs fans.
Fanatical.
If they've allowed the song to be used.
No, the Proclaimers, they're fanatical Hibbies. They've always been mad keen Hibernian fans. In fact, I know for an absolute fact, because I've talked to them many, many times, that they refused to have gigs on Scottish Cup final day if Hibs were involved, because they did not want to miss it the day that Hibs actually won the Scottish Cup. So wherever they were on the planet, they would make sure they would be able to get back in time if Hibs were playing the Scottish Cup final. So it was such a big thing for them. You know, even the song being sung was amazing, because they'd been Hibernian fanatics before that, long, long before that. So it's great news. It was great news for them and for everyone.
When you think of yourself then as a hippie, do you still have an affection? I mean, I know that the cup final win was the perfect storm, as you said, but do you still have an affection for Celtic? But when the two meet, is it very much, no, I'm a hippie?
No, it's Hibs I want to win the game, definitely. There's not even a sort of moment or heartbeats of thought with that, but my family, I'm one of six children. And the rest of them, they're all Celtic fans. So there's no antagonism or nastiness. There's not that. And then, I mean, I'd want Celtic to win every other game. So there was no nastiness. Just I moved on. I had my reasons, and people know what my reasons were. And we made, along with my son and the rest of my family, made incredibly welcome by the Hibs fans. And I've just basically gone native. I live in the East Coast now. And I do love my city of Glasgow, but to be fair, you know, I live in the East Coast and I love it here, and I love Edinburgh, you know, and I just feel very, very at home there. So that will get me really hated by a lot of Glaswegians, but it's just because you're actually allowed to like both, you know.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing, isn't it, is that people don't realise is that there's a lot of Liverpool people who live in Manchester and love both. Do you think that you finally found your sense of belonging and home in football as a Hibs fan? Do you think that's where you've finally sort of become at one with football almost?
Yeah, no, well, I don't know about that. I mean, my oneness with football is probably bigger than that. It's different from that. Yeah, I'm happy I've got the place. I mean, I don't get to many games just now because I'm always working, which is a real shame. But my son never misses a game home and away. He's brilliant, loves it. Dry's an old guy there, who's a big fan, so that's great news for them. But in actual fact, my kind of love of football is something wider than that. It's the beauty of the game. So I adore Manchester City. I just love Man City because of what they're doing just now. I've not got any particular affinity with that club, but you asked me who my favourite player is. Well, since the minute I saw him walk on a pitch, David Silva's been my favourite player playing in British football. And, you know, he plays football the way I try to. It's as simple as that. That's what I was trying to do.
I think a lot of your contemporaries have, and one or two names do come to mind, but a lot of your contemporaries are embittered is possibly a little too strong a word, but about the financial reward players have compared to yourselves. But I don't think I'm wrong in saying, Pat, that if there was any jealousy on your part, it's because you know that if you were coming through today, you'd probably thrive more as a player.
Oddly enough, I don't have such a thing as jealousy. For the first time, maybe in the last 3 or 4 years, the game would have suited me better. The start of the Premier League, it wouldn't have. It was too much power play. too much physicality about it. And I wasn't a big fan of the Premier League when it started the first 5, 6, 7 years. There were some great players, but most of them were brought in from abroad. But I look at it now, and it's I love it. I adore a lot of the players that are playing just now. De Bruyne as well, obviously, you know, Silva. I just like to see good football. And I'll be absolutely honest with you, I don't know if anyone will ever beat the great Barca side, who, you know, the one that beat Manchester United in the European the Champions League final. There was a period there where Iniesta and Xavi and Messi were the most beautiful thing since Brazil in 1970. So, coming home with football, well, it's the beauty of the game. And when I want to see the beauty of a game, I just watched Man City just now.
Well, there we go. Another episode done. I hope you enjoyed that. Pat was, just, as I said, Pat was very patient with us. And it was great to catch up with him and talk about. And know that the Proclaimers don't have a gig planned for Cup Final Day, just in case. I love that level of optimism. The reality is, we all know what the reality is. Anyway, thanks again for listening, and see you next week. Bye-bye.